Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Welcome in. Happy Thursday. Dirt and Sprague here. 6:02 in the Rose City. Hope your days are off to a good start. No Sprague today, just Dirt, and I got BYU Brandon with me.
What is happening? How'd I do?
That was solid, dude. That was solid. That's always the weird thing when you have to, when Sprague's gone and I'm here by myself, and, you know, do I take his opening? Do I do my opening? The opening of the show is 6:02 in the Rose City, but I don't say it. So now I feel like I'm stealing somebody else's opening line. So I stole his, you stole mine. Look at that.
I've always wanted to do that since I've been over here.
You've always wanted to do that.
Yeah, always wanted to do it. Because I feel the same way when, like, me and Brandon did it a couple weeks ago. I was like, do I do Dirt's little thing? Do I don't?
I think you need to.
Stay quiet? Yeah, so I was happy to fill in for that spot.
I think the people want a what is happening to start their day. I think they need it, right? It's a Thursday, you know? We got a lot to get to on the show today, and God, what a day in sports yesterday. We had big trades go down, Team USA won, lots to digest, but little thin roads on the way in today. I don't know if you see the same thing, little dead out there this morning.
My roads are always thin at 4:30 in the morning, so.
Right, when you're on your way, it doesn't matter.
You see more traffic than I do, but yeah, I mean, it's been pretty barren out there.
Everybody's getting ready for the 4th of July. Do we have any big 4th of July plans this weekend in the Brandon household?
Not really.
No, nothing big going on. We just barbecuing, anything?
I'm trying to think what we're even doing.
Will we or will we not see fireworks on Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely going to see fireworks. Fireworks.
Okay. I know in my neighborhood they do like a little block party out in like the, it's not a cul-de-sac, but it's like a corner that basically becomes a cul-de-sac in a sense.
Yeah.
So they'll have their fireworks and they just shoot them off. So we'll go hang out there. We'll get together with family. Do some just good old barbecue, maybe a parade or something.
Ooh, a good parade on the 4th
of
July. Solid.
I know we used to go like to the Oak Hills Parade or Hillsboro Parade.
Sure.
Not sure if we're doing that this year, but yeah, something's going to happen. When you have children, especially at 4 and 2, you got to go do something. So we'll find something to do.
So your kiddos are 4 and 2.
Yep.
How into, because this is something I've been curious of like, this will be the first 4th of July Teddy Ballgame's going to see fireworks. I don't think he saw any last, I mean, maybe in passing, like walking through, but you're like 1 and a half. You don't know what's going on, you know? You don't know what.
Right.
But this is the first year where I think he would at least look at it and have some awareness of like, oh, that's cool. There's lights, you know, things exploding in the sky. So I'm excited for that. Are your kids into fireworks?
I think they've gotten used to it.
Yeah.
I remember when my son Roman was like one or two, like it would be like a kind of hit or miss. Like
right.
he'd be cool with it for maybe the first 5 minutes, and then he'll be like, okay, I'm done. And then, that one looked cool though. Back in.
That was a fun one. That one exploded.
Yeah. So it depends, because he's not big on loud noises. He's very sensitive.
Yeah.
To that. And I don't know about my daughter yet. She's kind of just still trying to figure out loud noises. So we'll see. It's a bit of a wild card.
It's kind of like, you know, reminds me of when I got my dog, he was the same way. Like the first couple of 4th of Julys, there was no issue at all. And then there was a year where they were on a walk or something and somebody lit one off like close to where he was walking. And now it's like, dude, every 4th of July is just miserable with him. Like he is, we got to drug him out of his gourd just to get him to like not freak out and run around and go like jump, like break a door to get into a closet. Like, dude, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. There's no fireworks in the house. I promise. So you never know quite how it's going to go. I do have, because I do want to talk more about the 4th of July, but your 4 and 2 has made me think. I need a little bit of help here. Okay. I need a little life advice right now. We're going through it right now. Teddy Ballgame's about 2 and a half, and we are going through, and this, I mean, it happens in waves and phases, right? Dude, the last, I want to say, 2 weeks has been a brutal sleep regression. Just out of nowhere. I can't even remember the last time he slept through the entire night, which sometimes you would get. Like, you get into one of those good grooves, and you get like 4 or 5 nights in a row, and you feel like you got everything figured out.
Yep.
Like, oh, dude, this. We're living large, man. We're going to sleep.
Put your guard down. Like,
waking up at 7 a.m.
Start like, staying up a little later. Like, oh, we're good.
Got more time on my hands for activities. Mm-hmm. Don't need to go to bed right away. And then one of these comes crashing down. So about 2 and a half, I am kind of at a loss for what to do. Do you have any parenting advice? Now, I know with the two-year-old, you're probably going through it as well. Hopefully, the four-year-old's sleeping a little bit better.
He is. He just needs help getting to sleep.
Yeah. So, like, at the start of the night, it's a longer process, but once he's down.
My wife has to basically go to bed with him, and then she'll take a mini nap at 10 o'clock at night, and then come, and then I have to go get her.
You gotta like go wake her up, like,
yeah, right.
Let's go climb into bed.
Let's go into real bed.
You're gonna be if you wake up here in the morning, you're gonna be really uncomfortable. There's gonna be parts of your body that are sore that you didn't realize would be sore. So, what is the, do we have any, is it just, you know, grit your teeth and battle through it? Do we have 2.5-year-old sleep regression advice? Cause we are, I'm not kidding, man. It is like last night. I don't think we put him down at like 8, and we try to do bedtime a little bit earlier than that, but it never goes according to plan, obviously. Never. One more this, one more that, 5 more minutes, and you're like, all right, you know, you relent a little bit. So maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
And then I'm not kidding you, dude. It was like 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock, just like will not, refusing. And then up maybe at 1, up maybe at 4.
Oh, no.
It was one of those 4 o'clock wake ups. It's like, we're just up now. We ain't going back to sleep now. It's over. We're just going to be up for the rest of the day. Let's go drink a cup of coffee and see if we can get our day going.
Right.
Do we have any feedback for 2.5-year-old sleep regression? Do we have any advice out there?
I don't know if I can give you any sound advice. That's just the way of the beast for 2-year-olds.
It's just the life.
My daughter's kind of the same. Like if she, especially the worst thing is when they take a nap that you're not planning for.
Yeah.
So if they go out, like yesterday, they went out to a park with all their cousins. It was one of their cousins' birthdays. And then on the drive home, they both fell asleep.
Uh-oh.
So I come out of my nap yesterday to see my son on the couch asleep and my daughter basically just out of her nap eating some watermelon. I'm like, oh, this night's not going to go very
this
well.
This is not going to be
good.
So
sure enough, at like 8 o'clock, we're trying to put down the daughter. Her name's Jane. And she wants no part of going to bed.
It's not bedtime.
Stand up in a crib, do some jumps, just like, get me out of here type of scenario. So eventually, probably an hour later, then she finally is like, okay, I give up, and goes to sleep. But yeah, there's... And then she'll wake up again at maybe midnight crying or something.
Right, needing like, something.
Yeah.
Go to sleep. We're done with you. There's nothing wrong, okay? You're fine. I'm right here. I'm right outside the door. I'm not going anywhere, man. Just like I happened last time when I walked in here. I'm going to tell you the same thing. I'm right here. You're okay.
We're all trying to go to sleep.
I'm going
to
see you in like 5 hours. We're going to play, I promise. All day tomorrow. You're going to see me. You're going to wake up. I'm going to come home from work. It'll be a great day.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. I mean, I know every kid is different and everybody has like, people will give strategies of things, and then you try certain things with your kids, and you're like, well, that didn't work with my kids, so thanks for that non-helpful advice. I just, you know, you kind of lash out when you're going through it with a 2.5-year-old. I'm going to try today. One of my thoughts was we're going to go from crib to toddler bed.
Okay.
And then I read online that that's maybe one of the worst things that you can do, because I'm like, maybe he just wants to get out of bed and come see us tonight, and then we'll go back to, like, I'm okay with that. You come walk in, say hi, and then, you know, I've even tried, I would kill if he would just sleep in our bed, and I know that's probably a faux pas that you don't want to do, but I'm that desperate for like a full night of sleep,
right?
And he won't do it. We put him down in bed, and it's like maybe 15 minutes, and then he wakes up, and it's like playtime. He wants to play hide and seek under the sheets. He boops your nose. He goes 1, 2, 3, wake up, and you're like, dude,
no.
It is 1 o'clock in the morning. No, we're not waking up right now. So I'm not going to do the toddler bed thing. I might try an earlier nap and a shorter nap today. I don't know if that's going to be helpful at all, but that's kind of my next step of like, maybe we move up nap time a little bit so it's not napping later in the day, and then we cut it off after like, I don't know, an hour. But you're so spot on. When you get the impromptu fall asleep later on in the day, like after a nap window has already passed and you get like a 5 or even if it's 5 minutes, doesn't have to be a long time.
No. Yeah.
The whole night is thrown, like your entire evening, you're just like, oh my God, this is going to be horrible. No, don't wake up. Whenever we're driving home from somewhere later on in the day, like you go have dinner somewhere, you're over at in-law's house or whatever, you're driving home, you're just screaming to keep them awake in the car seat in the back of the, no. Hey, no. Hey, look out the window. Roll the window down. Roll back up. What's the song that I can get?
You want a song off?
What music do you want? What do you want to hear right now? I'll turn it up as loud as you want to, buddy. Let's Baby Beluga.
I've always wanted to, like, if I had like a water bottle, just splash some water in the bag.
Do some of those.
Oh, good. You're awake. Great.
All right. Wake up.
No, back to sleep.
Wait. Damn it. Wake up. Well, that's what we're dealing with right now. A couple of guys who have 2-year-olds who are not sleeping. So, you know, I will say this. I am excited for the four-day weekend. It's a bit of a Thursday, Friday.
TGIT. So,
TGIT. I love a good TGIT. Spray had a TGIW yesterday.
There's lucky him.
Nothing wrong with a TGIW. We got our TGITs today. So it will be a we're all off tomorrow, obviously, for the 4th of July holiday. So we will not be in tomorrow. Last show of the week. I am very excited about the 4th of July because I have always been big fan, right? Not just a United States thing, although 250, big deal, right? We made it all the way. How about us?
Yeah.
You know, quarter of the way to 1,000. Look at us, man. We're making some moves. I think if I were to power rank holidays, like if I were going to give a top five, this might be controversial to some. Christmas always probably has to be number one. Like
always.
Just especially now with kids. Like it just takes on a different meaning.
Yep.
The excitement level. Like we were one of the things we did last night laying in bed trying to get him to sleep. I'm pretty sure Here Comes Santa Claus was sung and he wanted to sing about that. And I'm like, all right, whatever, I'm not gonna fight it. That's fine. So like Christmas will always be number one on the big board. I might go out on a limb and say the 4th of July is my second favorite holiday of the year. I think it might be number two on my big board. Thanksgiving is great for the football and the family and the food and the time off. Like, you know, I get it, although I'm not the biggest Thanksgiving food guy, but I love Thanksgiving. It's just so closely connected with Christmas that you're almost like, by the time Thanksgiving comes, I'm almost excited that it's over, and you're like, I'm just ready to start. Can I go get my Christmas tree now? Like, you're pushing past it. So I might actually put Halloween ahead of Thanksgiving, maybe number three, because it's kind of the start of that run of holidays, and you're getting into the fall, the thick of football season. Kids, again, get super into it. At number five would be tough. So I think I would go Christmas one, 4th of July two, Halloween three, Thanksgiving four. Five gets tricky. Five, because there's a handful of them you can choose from. Labor Day is always solid. College football starts. I always look forward to Labor Day, although it's not like a big vacation holiday. And then you got your, you know, Juneteenth's got to get thrown in there because it's a three-day weekend in the middle of the summer now. I'm not saying no to that. There's a difference having like a three-day weekend in June when you could go do stuff and like a holiday randomly off in like March and it's pouring down rain.
Right.
So it's a little more enjoyable to have that day off in June. I think I'll land on Labor Day, though. I think that's my definitive top five. I'm going to go Christmas, 4th of July, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Labor Day, top five holidays.
I like it. I like it. I might.
Who am I overrating or underrating?
I don't think you're overrating anything. I think your logic is sound. I'd still like Christmas number one. 4th of July, I think there's a lot, kind of like we said about Juneteenth, there's a lot to do during 4th of July.
Yes, there's all that bonus day.
You know, trying to be a good American.
Right. It's also nice to have like the collective of like basically everybody's doing, like we're all checked out and ready for a three-day, four-day weekend, depending on how many days. Like everybody seems to be in the same boat on that
one. Yeah, I got you there. I like Halloween at three, and I know my kids love Halloween, so and my wife, they're big on Halloween. I'm not as much, but the fact that they would like, they get to go do stuff. Usually I'm busy with sports stuff, so Halloween basically doesn't exist for me. At least
that
for
time
the
of year is
decade.
Tough, man. It is tough. If you're working in the sport, that's the other thing about Thanksgiving and Halloween, that it's like you're in the thick of stuff if you're working in sports media or whatever, radio or TV. Like that's your sweet spot. Now, were you a Halloween kid when you were a kid, or did you just, you were never really
a
into
little bit.
It?
I was just all in for the candy.
Yeah. I mean, who's not?
Like costumes, I'm not too big on. Like, I just basically would throw a jersey on and call it a costume and call it good.
I'm about the same way.
Yeah, so not I know people really get into it, and I'm impressed with the costumes that people come up with and stuff.
The creativity.
It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm excited for the 4th of July. Halloween, solid. I think that's a good top five right there. I think that's a good top five. We do have some thoughts coming in on yeah. I mean, look, everybody, I do appreciate the feedback because I want to genuinely know, like, if there's, because every kid's going to be different, right? So if something works for your kid, it's not going to work for, you know, that's not a universal thing. Somebody said we stopped naps altogether, very short naps. They were tyrants for a week while adjusting. After a week or two, they were sleeping through the night from 8:30 to 6. Like, I would take that. 6 o'clock's early on the weekend. Like, I'd like to get a little, you know, I'm not gonna be too baggy here. If you give me 8:30 to 6 every night, 8:30 to 6 would be delightful, dude.
Right.
I can't wait for that. Somebody said a lot of time they can't sleep well. It's because they're growing a bunch. I'd suggest lots of physical activity during the day. Get them good and tired. Do a nice warm bath before bed. Help his body relax. I feel like we're doing both.
That
those.
Works, but again, don't overtire them to the point, at least make sure that the drive home is short. Because again, if you're at a 20-30 minute drive home, they will crash before they get home.
Yes.
And then you're in trouble.
Yes. We watch our 5-year-old granddaughter. This one came in at the fan text line 503-864-6326. Whatever you want to throw in. I'm open ears right now for advice. We watch our 5-year-old granddaughter. Here's the secret: have them run around and play like it's the last day of playing. Then when they're tired, have them chase your pup around. Feed them a Thanksgiving-ish, aka a big meal, and they'll pass out in their food. All right, you know, I feel like the running around and playing time is not, we're not lacking that. Like, it's a lot outdoor, especially this time of year. It's a little more challenging when it's, like, colder and darker, and it's, you know, like 4:30 and it's dark out, a la Thanksgiving time or Halloween time. But now we're outside all the way till like 7:30 at night. Like, it's just, it's nonstop. It doesn't stop moving. So I don't know how much more active we could possibly get. Right. I am going to try the nap one, though. I like that. The Halloween ranking, people are upset New Year's and Easter and St. Patrick's Day aren't on there. I personally think New Year's is a pretty overrated holiday. I've never been a big New Year's Eve guy. It's always this big buildup. It's kind of like prom night, right? Like that old, say, like, oh, here we go, it's prom night. And then you get through prom night and you're like, that was it? That was all prom night was? Like, New Year's, sure, it's, you know, people like, if you like going out, you like making a night on the town,
right.
I get why you like New Year's. That's just never been my cup of tea. So I'm not super high on New Year's. Also, again, to the Thanksgiving point, it's in the same week as Christmas. Like, it's the secondary holiday again, in its own pocket.
Christmas is kind of bleeded into November 1st.
Yes.
To the end of the year.
I mean,
that's how Christmas has developed over the last two decades.
How far away are we from going into a Costco and seeing Christmas trees up? Because I guarantee you we're not that far away.
Probably in 2 weeks.
I haven't been to a Costco recently, but I'd be willing to guess we got some Halloween stuff up in Costco.
Oh,
I bet if you're walking,
that was 2 months ago,
there's some skeletons or some giant pumpkins, and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, it's a good deal. kind of looks good. St. Patrick's Day was great in college, after college. If you want me to be in your top five of holidays, there has to be a component of a day off of work, like a 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
Like Easter. I love it. We do brunches every Easter. Easter's, you know, a delightful holiday, right? It's the start of spring. Sometimes you get good weather. I'm pro Easter. I got no beef with Easter. There's not a day off associated with it. It's just a Sunday. And then I get the Sunday scaries at 2:00 and I got to go back to work the next day.
Right.
So I need, you know, St. Patrick's Day and Easter, again, they're fine, but there's not a day off. Now you can throw Halloween in my face because there's not a day off with Halloween. But Halloween is one of those, like, collective community things. Like, we'll get to the World Cup today. It's been a lot of fun to watch USA. That's where we're going to start here in a couple of minutes. Because, man, that game was awesome last night. And here we go. Like, all right, that's exactly what they needed to do. And the drama was there and all of that. There's this, like, collective coming together and rooting for USA that's been a lot of fun to watch, right? Like, there's not many things that unify our country. I get that. That's one of the reasons 4th of July and Halloween are solid. And maybe it's just because of the neighborhood I live in. But it does kind of seem like a vibe of, like, the whole neighborhood just shuts down, and everybody's out barbecuing, and everybody's out, you know, back in the day, lighting fireworks off in their driveway. Well, I'm curious to see how prevalent it is this year, because fireworks are technically illegal. But, like, in Halloween's the same way. Like, in our neighborhood on Halloween, there's multiple blocks around our house that they just shut the entire street down, and people put tents up in the middle of the street, and it's like a big cookout. It's like, this is awesome, dude. Everybody's doing the same thing. So 4th of July is kind of that way for me, of, like, everybody's in on it in the neighborhood. And some of the other holidays, like Easter, you're kind of off doing your own thing. You go to your church, you go to your brunch, you go to your family get-together or whatever. But those ones are more communal holidays, and I enjoy that, man. I enjoy the collective get-together. Excited for it this weekend.
Yeah. I would sneak in maybe Father's Day, but that also kind of goes with your Sunday deal. But
Father's Day's a good
one. You don't do a lot on Sunday.
That is very true.
You get to choose what you want to do on Sunday.
I got to admit.
On that day, on Father's Day.
I got to admit. You threw a curveball at me there. I wasn't even thinking about Father's Day. That might have to get that. I might have to bump Labor Day for Father's Day. I think it might have to crack the top five. I think I'm adjusting my top five right now.
It's a pretty awesome day.
I mean, having a day where you could actually be like, I'm just going to do what I want to do.
I can do what I do.
It's pretty solid.
I get to pick what dinner is. I get to watch the U.S. Open.
Right.
It's a pretty solid day.
I think you've changed my mind. I'm sorry, Labor Day. All right. See you later, dude. I usually have to work on Labor Day anyways. We have to come in and do shows. Get out of here,
again,
Labor Day.
Another non-existent holiday for sports people.
Right. That's way too big of a time of year, man. That's the start of football season. Well, that's my definitive top five. Father's Day is a great addition. I'm throwing that one in there. Any more feedback on getting 2.5-year-olds to sleep would be greatly appreciated. And hopefully we get a weekend of sleep. Pray for us, all right? Anybody out there with a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, Godspeed to you and your 4th of July plans, and hopefully it's not ruined by a kid who won't sleep. Lots to get to on the show on a Thursday. Boy, oh boy, do we got a lot to jam in here. Last show of the week for us. So here we go. Jaylen Brown was traded yesterday. Not to us.
Finally.
Finally.
Not to us, but
that
finally.
Saga is over. What is Boston doing? Philly? That looks pretty good. So we'll talk about that, the Jaylen Brown trade. Will Portland regret not jumping in there? Tyson Aldridge, good buddy. He's always my go-to when Sprague's out. He was at the Savannah Banana Games last weekend at Autzen. He was at the last USA World Cup game in Seattle against Australia, which is where they will play Monday night. So we'll get his thoughts on that and then probably throw some duck-related questions at him. Let's start, though, with, like, we're all in on it, right? Here we go. USA wins last night, first time since 2002. They win a game in the knockout round. The audio of it, the vibes of it, let's dive into it. Did you watch? Did you enjoy it? 503-864-6326. Off and running on a Thursday. Thanks for being with us, Dirt and Sprague. 105.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm on FM The Fam.
This is Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 FM and 1080 AM.
Well, you got the fever. Certainly felt it last night, man. What a scene. What an atmosphere. Half of us don't know squat about soccer or football. Footyball. But it don't matter, man. That was a lot of fun. USA playing Bosnia last night. And we talked about it a lot on the show yesterday for obvious reasons. What a moment it was for them. Team USA has not won a knockout round game since 2002. 2002. What were you doing in 2002? I'm trying to think, how old was I in 2002?
2002, I was 12.
12, yeah. I think I was 13.
So puberty was happening. Yeah. Last time the U.S. won it.
What grade are you in when you're was that probably seventh grade?
That's
maybe?
Like seventh grade, yeah, sixth, seventh grade.
Somewhere in that middle of middle school mm-hmm. age where you don't know who you are and everything's, you know, confusing and. Well, it was a long time ago, and that's how long it's been. First one since 2002, and the atmosphere is definitely worth talking about. I got a lot of the audio that I want to play. Country Roads becoming the winning song, it has been awesome. Let's get to, though, and you know more about soccer than I do, but I'm going to try and lend my expertise opinion here, okay, as my newfound soccer fandom watching this game last night.
Right.
Can anybody explain that red card to me? Can any, like, I, look, that was gnarly. Balogun steps on the back of his, you know, ankle, Achilles, whatever. It was, like, that was gnarly. I get it. Like, a lot of times we make fun of soccer players for falling down and screaming bloody murder when nothing really happened. That was one, like, dude, roll around as long as you need to. That looked like it hurt like hell. No issue with that. I'm like, I'm texting everybody in my life who I know watches soccer religiously. I'm, like, firing texts off to Patrick. Like, what is that? How is this? And my understanding of it is that intent is supposed to be part of it. So I'm going to compare this to something that I understand and I follow closely. This, to me, is targeting in college football.
Yes.
Like, when you watch somebody randomly have helmet-to-helmet contact because it's just the way the football play developed, tossing them out of the game is ludicrous, and it makes no sense, and it doesn't serve any purpose because there's nothing either person could have done there to get there. Like, it's just you're running at full speed. It's going to happen from time to time. And then you see the play where the guy comes in and lowers his head and spears a guy in the face mask on purpose. And you're like, that, get him out of the game. That should be ejection worthy. Like, if you're stepping on the back of somebody's leg with purpose, by all means, toss him out of the game. I'm watching that. I don't understand how in any way they come to the decision of a red card. And I didn't realize in real time, because I'm watching, I didn't have the audio fully up. We're running around, chasing the kid around. I think my wife was the one that let me know something happened. Like, ooh, somebody's down. There might be a red card. I'm like, huh, what's going on? I pop back into the living room. And now he's out for the Belgium game. Mm-hmm. He can't play in the next round. And so a guy who had a goal overturned early in the game has been, I mean, probably your best player, at least in the conversation.
Your best scorer,
at least at this point in the tournament. Now in the round of 16, you don't have him. Can we explain the red card, or am I in the right here?
I took to Twitter and I said VAR stands for very atrocious review. I mean, it's a freak play. It's just two yes. guys going for the ball, and he just happens to step on his ankle. Like, I'm sorry, the dude has big feet. Like, I don't know what to
right.
I don't know how to control that. And then the point that they keep slowing it down when they're reviewing it, I'm like, no, that totally makes it look intended at that point.
Yes, by that point.
So it's they just changed the narrative on it so quickly when it just looked like just a freak collision, which happens in soccer frequently.
Yes.
To the point where there was a Bosnian guy later that literally did a full-on screen on one of our players. I hated it. I hated it from the get-go, and I knew just from the way that the announcers were saying, it's just like, oh, this is going to go to a red card. Like,
yeah.
It was just inevitable. And so when we were at the peak of our high, everything was good.
It's 1-0. We're rolling. We're dominating possession time.
We are controlling the game.
Yes.
For that to happen, all the anxiety from minute zero comes back, and now you're like, oh, crap. Well, now we're going to suffer for the next 20 minutes
right.
praying that they don't tie this game. Because then they were bringing up all, Bosnia came back against Italy with this situation.
Right.
I'm just like, quit scripting this for us. Please change the narrative. Thank you, Malik Tillman.
Dude, that was awesome.
That
I think to that point, though, man, because I had the same thought of like, uh-oh. That, I mean, there's 30 minutes left in the game, and you got to play a man down the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long-ass time to be out there playing 11-on-10. When you're, I mean, it's one thing if you're up 3-0, right? You can just kind of go into cruise control and just, you know, play defense and you're fine.
Right.
One goal, all of a sudden, you find yourself in a shootout potentially.
Yep.
And then you get the other goal, Pulisic scores on the other side, and then they overturn that one as well. So you thought, all right, there's your 2-0 lead. And then that one's wiped off. That one was a little more obvious, I thought, than the first one. So you have two goals waved off, so it's still 1-0. That was, I think, that part of everything that went into it. Like, it sucks that he's going to be out of the round of 16. Hopefully, the United States can overcome that. Belgium certainly looks like a problem. I thought they were dead in the water yesterday, and they come storming back. Like, where did this come from? Senegal's going to win this game, and that didn't happen. So, hopefully, you can overcome it. But that there was a part of it that almost made it more of a unifying win, if that makes sense, of like,
yeah.
Now our backs are back against the wall. We were the heavy favorite coming in. There's that uneasy feeling early in the game. They had a corner like 20 seconds into the game. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, here we go. It's going to be one of those nights. And, you know, you end up taking the 1-0 lead. Then you overcome having a man down for 30 minutes. And Malik Tillman's goal felt like, now again, I'm new here, so welcome me into the pool. Hopefully the water's warm. I'm going to go out. Like, that felt like not only you know, I'm just going to say it. That's the best goal in United States men's World Cup history, is it not?
Yes.
Like, just in terms of what it meant in the moment to win the game, to go up 2-0, and the way that he scored it had a vibe of, like, we belong here. Like, that was like an elite, something that you would see somebody from Portugal do.
Right.
And I don't feel like, again, new here, so correct me if I'm wrong, I don't feel like we've had guys like that in the past who score goals like that in World Cup, especially in a moment like that.
Yeah.
You get the free kick. All the stuff that was going on before that, too. Like, I ended up like, hey, Bosnia, good job, good effort. your coach grabbing the ball, yelling at the official.
How do you not red card that?
Get his ass out of there. He grabbed the ball in delayed play.
He's like 2-3 yards into the field. I'm
yes.
just like, how?
Refusing to hand the ball over? What are we doing? After, by the way, look, some of the calls I'm sure go both ways, and they probably were right to be upset that some calls didn't go their way. The United States also had a guy thrown out of the game on a ludicrous red call. So we were already a man down because, in my opinion, of a bad call. And then on the other side of it, you're going to come out and complain and act like you've been wronged here. You got a man advantage for the rest of the game, and you're upset you didn't get a free kick somewhere around midfield because somebody bumped hips with somebody else. So all of that kind of led into it, and the Tillman goal ended up just making it one of the more memorable soccer games. There's not a lot in my history that I could say, oh yeah, I remember this USA game or that. Tim Howard's performance, obviously. Like, there's certain little moments or goals that stand out over the
right.
years, but without a many deep runs in your history, that's one. Like, I don't know how much of the knock or the group stage stuff I'll remember. The first game I certainly will, because there was all that buzz and build up, and it's the first game in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They jump out 2-0 early. Like, that was a really fun one. That's one that will stand out to me of, like, I'm going to remember a Malik Tillman goal 5 years from now and how sick that was, or 3 years from now, I should say, because we'll have another World Cup by then. But that felt a little bit different, and the backs against the wall mentality kind of came out. And it was incredibly impressive, man. That, I don't care who you're playing, whether the best team or the worst team in the world, man down for 30 minutes with only a 1-0 lead on kind of a bogus call. That felt a little bit different last night. And now we get another game up in Seattle.
Yeah.
Monday night. Right, Monday night? Am I correct
yeah.
on that?
Mm-hmm.
Buddy. The scene in Seattle on Monday night is going to be pretty awesome. How are we feeling about the United States' chances without their best goal scorer to continue this run?
Well, it's just, it's going to be a next man up mentality. I feel like this roster is a lot deeper than in the past. So I feel like we've got dudes that can come in and perform.
Seems like it, yeah.
So I'm not too concerned, especially the way Belgium looked that first 85 minutes. Like, I'm not too concerned right now. Right. I probably will be on Monday. But yes. as of today, right. Sitting on the high of yesterday,
right.
I like our chances. And I know the split, I think I saw the betting odds already. I think it's like 130 minus 130 for us. So it's going to be a tight game.
Okay. So we're
it's going to be a dogfight. So I do like our chances. I think we do have people that can perform and can fill in for that role. Yes, it's a bummer because he's our best scorer. And he's been so good and been such a threat to the defensive line that has kind of opened up openings for everybody else. So I think we have a chance. And we've already hit the bar. We've succeeded.
No doubt about it.
This World Cup has been a success.
No doubt about it.
As we stand right now.
No doubt.
Now we need to get greedy.
Yes.
And that comes with this next game. And I think we can pull it out.
The scene in Seattle for the Australia game was incredible. The crowd popped when they went up 2-0. And now you add these stakes into the mix of it and what that scene's going to look like. It's a powerful thing to have everybody behind you, and the atmosphere in Santa Clara was great last night. I'm with you. Like, this was, if I remember talking to Patrick before the World Cup kicked off, of like, what is a realistic goal? And it was obviously getting out of your group. When you're hosting, you get a very favorable group. That would have been a disaster to not advance out of that. So they easily did that, right? You win your first two games. Okay, that bar is, or that box is checked, and then you get a matchup. In the first knockout game, it's like, that's one you should win. That would have been a devastating loss last night to have all this built-up momentum and energy and excitement, and the country's kind of wrapped up into it, to lose that game last night, which is why, to your point, we were all kind of puckering when it's man down with 30 minutes to go. Here we go. And so they won that. I'm with you. Like, that's about what we could ask for. Now you get a round of 16 game. That's a winnable game. If you don't, you're not going to kill them for it. They clearly have progressed. They've clearly gotten better and evolved after some really embarrassing international play over the last 10 years. Like, there was a clip going viral of, like, 2 years ago. I don't think he was on the dais last night. Maybe he was at the game. But Alexi Lawless doing a thing after the United States lost the game 2 years ago of, like, this is embarrassing. Mm-hmm. We need to get better. Like, I can't remember what the game was or who they lost to or if it was a friendly or whatever the case. But it's just funny to think about, that's where we were and now here we are, where it feels like for the first time there's actually been a little bit of progress and a little bit of catching up with everybody else. And right. So now you got house money, man. You win on Monday night and all of a sudden you find yourself – in the final, the final eight,
you
right?
You are one of the eight best teams in the country.
In the semifinals.
Or like, in the world, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a success right there.
That is a significant success. And then we see, you know, which of those European powers, Spain, Portugal, Croatia, come out of that side.
Yeah.
But not looking ahead. Like, Belgium is the, we're on the Belgium.
We need to give them the Belichick.
It's going to be a dogfight. But again, with that home side behind them, and I think that's been such a big difference maker to have the World Cup here and to have that kind of home crowd advantage. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun game.
I think Seattle might set some noise records on Monday night. That's going to be badass. I want to play a little bit of audio on the other side. We joked yesterday about our goal calls in the opening of the show. Had a solid one last night. Also, the sound of the Tillman goal to give a 2-1 lead. And then also, on the other side, a little bit more World Cup, because some of the numbers that are trickling in, not even from last night's game, we haven't seen those quite yet, a little too early for that. There's another game that I want to point to that broke a record that I think is going to indicate how outrageous the number from last night's going to be. So how in are we as a country? I'll tell you how in we are. A little more World Cup next, 105.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
1FM The Fam. Did you see the couple that climbed to the top of the Empire State Building yesterday?
I saw that. That was going to be a magic hat for me.
Oh, okay. We don't need to get into it then. We'll hold it. We'll hold it for 9.
But I did see that, yeah.
Dude, if I'm on like the third floor of a hotel looking out a window, I'm like, that's a little high. I hate heights. Seeing those pictures?
No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
I'm glad they didn't show looking down. No, thank you.
And some social media content. We can get to that more. It is a Magic Hat Thursday. Got some good submissions, some fun with audio, all that coming up. At 9 a.m., some thoughts coming in on the one person said, where did this go, on the YouTube chat. Dude, I know you're not a soccer guy. Stepping on the ankle is an automatic red card. Soccer shoes are not like normal shoes. They were way more dangerous when you get stepped on. I certainly understand that. A lot of the other thoughts that came in were basically like it was a horrible call. So, there's always going to be two sides to it. I understand that. I felt like intent should be, and maybe it is and isn't in some cases. And there certainly are times when I'm seeing like offsides calls and I'm like, how is that? That didn't make any sense. So it's probably just like officiating in every other sport. It's an inaccurate science. You're going to get calls that make sense. Sometimes they don't make sense. But the sentiment that I mostly saw was that it was a bad call, although we are certainly biased in our opinion of that call because it's going to impact us on Monday night. I do have some ratings thoughts and a question that I thought was interesting that I think people will talk about as this tournament goes on. But before we do that, let's hear from Fox and Telemundo last night. So Malik Tillman is the hero. He's the name that we'll remember for a long time. Scores the goal to go up 2-0. The free kick from, was it inside the box? Just outside the box? Just outside the box. I love, by the way, too, the broadcaster, I think it was Twelman, who said, man, the whole left side of the goal here is wide open.
Stu Holden said that right before he kicked it. Yeah,
is that who it is? And it's like he's right. Yeah, it is.
Tony Romo type of situation.
It absolutely was
right side. That's just that's a soccer player telling you
right.
That's where he should go.
And their goalie's like trying to line everybody up to block that side, and it just went right over their heads into the corner. A beautiful goal. Here's how it sounded on Fox.
Look at how Vasil's giving up the entire right side of his goal. Tillman.
John Strong, man. Go Ducks. Here's how it sounded on Telemundo. Now, I have not listened to the entire thing yet, so I'm curious, how long do we go on for?
La carrera de Tillman. Ahí va Tillman. Goal! Goal!
So much better.
It's so good.
I don't know how they do this.
Estados Unidos lo hizo Malik Tillman.
God, that is so good. The way his voice kind of breaks there at the end. He's out of gas. I can't keep going, man. God, that is fantastic. Yes, at the end, that absolutely needs to be a drop. That is so good. Is there a way, now maybe, I feel like they say it at the start of every broadcast, is there a way, do I have the Telemundo channel? Is that on YouTube TV? No offense to John Strong. John Strong is great. He's a local guy.
I believe it's on YouTube TV.
Can I find the broadcast? Can I like click?
I feel like it's also part of Peacock, so that's you can probably grab that.
Okay.
Through Peacock, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's right, because they have the Spanish umbrella. Broadcast of the game.
So I think, I believe you're able to see that.
I want to experience. I'm not going to know anything he's saying, because I don't remember anything about Spanish, and I probably should, because I took like 15 years of it. But man, I want to, like, that needs, I always see those after the fact, and John Strong is great. There's just something different about multiple 30-second goals there, especially in that moment. You hear the crowd going crazy. That was awesome. We were curious yesterday on what the number was going to be. What did we settle on? Over 30 million, somewhere in that range is kind of what we were thinking.
Yep.
I saw this. Let me pull it up in my notes here. There was one that blew me away. This was from, what night was the game? Hold on, let me find it. The Netherlands-Morocco game. Was that Tuesday night? Monday night or Tuesday night?
I'm going to believe it's Tuesday.
And it went to the PKs? I know it was earlier this week.
Yeah.
And it was the late game, by the way. So for us on the West Coast, I want to say that one ended around 8:45 Pacific.
Yeah, that was a serious prime time.
So you get the later crowd on the East Coast. The Netherlands-Morocco game averaged on Fox 10.58 million viewers. That is the most watched non-U.S. Men's World Cup telecast in English language history, excluding a World Cup final. And so you're just getting a random Monday night or Tuesday night.
Monday night.
Monday night, Netherlands-Morocco game, averaging 11 million viewers. I think it just tells you how kind of wrapped up into all this we are, which we certainly are. And if you're going to get that 11 average for Netherlands-Morocco, which kicked off a little bit later on.
I
want
to say that is partially credit to the three games before it.
Yes, it was such a good day.
The first matches of this round of 32 were probably some of the greatest stretch of soccer we've seen in a while.
Like, and then yesterday, like 2 days ago, it was a bit of a dud. You had some kind of lopsided games where it wasn't a lot. And then yesterday totally made up for it.
Sure.
Because the England game was great, first out of the gate, right? Harry Kane scores multiple goals. I didn't send it to you, but I meant to, and then I forgot. But the, you know, the Wonderwall at the end of the game and their crowds all singing it and getting into it, like that scene was awesome. So that, like, to have a big name player that even I know have a moment like that in the World Cup for England, who's always seemingly, according to Patrick Harris, disappointing in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big deal. You get the Belgium game where they're down 2-0 the entire time, and they score goals at the end and come back, and oh my God, they won the game. And then U.S. with the man down with the last 30 minutes, and ended up being super compelling. And so that's a good point. Like, it's the all of the games, for the most part, there was that one day, what was it, like, you know, France kicked
dominated
the crap out of Sweden, and you're like, all right, that game kind of sucked. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple duds in there. It's kind of the Mexico game, Ecuador.
Yep.
Was a little bit out. But other than that, man, all the other knockout games have been great. We'll see if we get more of it today. I might hold this for later on in the show. By the way, I appreciate P1 Harley saying he's going to boycott waffle shops all weekend.
Yeah.
Hold firm, baby.
No Belgian waffles.
We got another one. Also Belgian chocolate, too. That's right. Belgian chocolate. Okay. You take that chocolate and shove it. But it's a question about, like, you know, what would this, and I do think it's a fascinating topic because I go through this a lot. I'm a diehard hockey fan. I love hockey. I've always loved hockey. And when the United States went on their run, and that's different because they've been close to winning gold medals. It's not like they've always disappointed. Mm-hmm. They've been in gold medal games before. They just hadn't won a gold medal since, obviously, the Miracle on Ice. It was different because there was a little bit more hope going into it. But we have this conversation every 4 years or so when the Winter Olympics come around. And it's like, man, is there going to be an offshoot of this? Is there going to be an increase in attention? Is there going to be, because the numbers were big. And the gold medal game for USA Canada back in February, the peak audience was roughly 26 million. And if you remember, that's in Milan. And so the game, I want to say, started at 5 a.m. Pacific. It was early
probably
on the West Coast. And so you're going to get a, it's a little bit different. You'll get more viewers here. I'm just a question of, what does this mean for soccer? Like, do we genuinely believe that this leads to an uptick in interest in the sport? It's always so tough because the Olympics or the World Cup are such outliers of country unity that it's hard to kind of, I don't know, it's hard to put your hands around exactly what it means for the future of the sport and the interest in the sport. There's no doubt that in terms of United States soccer, I think we are now all in as a country and hopeful, and will be so again in 4 years at the next World Cup, no matter how far this run goes. But the question of, like, is there a ripple down effect or a trickle down effect, I should say, of other leagues benefiting from it is a fascinating one, because I don't know if that will happen to soccer, but it's certainly, with the number of people watching and the attention they're getting, there's going to be some hope there, I'm sure, from soccer leagues of, like, can we get some of these viewers and some of these dollars? Because we're all in on this right now, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's always the question when these smaller sports get a moment like this of, can it roll over into the professional leagues that we have here? And MLS is different, because MLS, I feel like, is just a select, a select audience.
Yeah.
It's not exactly like a nationally well-known or respected league.
Right.
So
it's not a Champions League. It's not a Premier League.
NHL is up there. NHL's with the big four.
It's the best league.
That was kind of a different scenario. And then they had a little spike in audience after the U.S. did their thing in the Olympics. But for soccer, I think soccer, as far as, like, watching maybe Premier League and watching, you know, Champions League, those type of events, those get viewers. I'm not so sure about the MLS. I think we'd have to wait and see. Yes, we have Lionel Messi in the MLS, and that will probably get a lot of views going forward. But if you're talking, like, watching Timbers games, maybe.
Yeah, does it trickle down to that, where it's like, now I'm going to go watch a soccer, you know, because it's, again, the hockey comp's tough, too, because all those guys played in the NHL. And so when you're done, you're like, there's Jack Hughes playing for, right?
Right.
You could go player by player, and there's a game of them on. Whereas this, soccer is so complicated because there's so many leagues all over the world. Like, I'd be curious to look at the United States roster and, you know, pinpoint exactly, like, I'm sure there's guys playing in Spain, there's guys playing in Italy, there's guys playing in England, there's guys playing in the MLS, there's guys, like, it's all over the world, and so it's not one league that it kind of funnels into. I find it an interesting topic because there certainly is a fever of soccer going on right now. Like, there certainly is momentum, and I think everybody is – I think that number from last night's game is going to be massive. The Monday night game, like, you're going in through the 4th of July weekend with all this national pride buildup, and then you get a USA game on Monday night. Like, dude, that's going to be huge. And so, does it trickle down? I don't know. We can talk a little bit more about that later. I do want to get back into the World Cup because there's some other really fun games coming up this weekend. We're going to be off tomorrow, so it's our last show of the week. Some of the games from this weekend I want to talk about, including the Mexico one on Sunday night. How great is that going to be?
That's going to be a game.
Talk about a game to watch in Telemundo. People are saying you can find on YouTube TV. It's just an option there. So I'm doing that on Sunday. It's going to be great. and people saying Souk did a 20-second goal last night on the show.
Oh, he did?
He got to 20 seconds?
That's pretty good.
Let me warm up my pipes a little bit. Maybe we'll try it in the final hour of the show today. Maybe we'll throw that in the mail sack at like 9:20 or something. I don't know if I got the lung capacity quite yet. It's early in the day. We still have a lot to get to. Fun watching the USA win last night. Suck it, Bosnia. See you later. Let's start the second hour, I should say. Jaylen Brown got traded. It was not to Portland. According to Jason Quick on our show, we were not involved in the conversations. Are we going to regret it? And what is Boston do? Am I taking crazy pills? We'll start the second hour next. 105.1 FM The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.